Well, the Pacers don't have any first-round picks. They have three as of the moment in the second round. And to put all of this on paper, well, audio paper, is our great friend, the beat writer, Dustin DePerrick from the Indianapolis Star. Hey, buddy, how are you?
Doing well, Glass. Thanks for having me, as always.
Oh, thanks for being with us. You bring a welcome distraction after the roller coaster we've been through. And I tell you what, I've been doing this since 2008. I have not, from this vantage point high atop One City Center, I have not seen action like that. It felt like being in the eye of a hurricane as it moved through. It was ripping and roaring, and we've got trees down and power outs and all kinds of things. So folks want to do a little escapism, well, let's bring sports into the conversation. Number one, the Pacers do not have a number one. And we know that Pascal Siakam, in theory, the new rules this year, once the NBA Finals ended, one day after, you could start talking to your free agents about long-term deals and the such. There's been rumors TJ McConnell is going to get a long-term extension as well. Tell us what we know before we get to the NBA draft tomorrow night, my good man.
Yeah, no, so far, I mean, we do know that Siakam intends to sign a four-year, $189 million, $189.5 million deal. So basically a max, the max that you can give somebody in his position. They didn't give him a fifth year. I mean, I at this point, don't know whether that was at Siakam's behest or at the Pacers' behest or both, what led to him not getting that fifth year, because you have that option, basically. Pacers inherited his Bird rights, his Larry Bird rights, in the trade, and so they could have given him a fifth year while everybody else could have only offered four. So again, don't know. Obviously, that benefits the Pacers in some way. If, of course, he in some ways falls off a little bit by age 35, if you don't want to pay a guy like that, $50 million at that point, they kind of escape that. Don't know if that's Siakam's decision, though, if he thinks he's going to be a better free agent at that point.
Do you know how long the collective bargaining agreement goes? I think that would probably be one of the clues there. Because if the collective bargaining agreement ends in 4 years, Siakam would be foolish to keep the fifth year, because the rights deals and all that other, how that's going to be split up, could lead to him to get more money. But I think it's a benefit for everybody. If it after 4 years, you'll know if it works out or not. And if it doesn't, like you said, he's 35. He can go join somewhere else. Who's going to pick up that salary? Right. So I think it gives everybody some flexibility.
Right. No, exactly. I mean, I don't know exactly when the CBA ends. How long that goes exactly. It's relative. Obviously, it just came into effect last year. So I don't know if it's a 5-year deal or a 10-year deal or exactly how that goes. Obviously, the money has a chance to change. They're not going to, make drastic moves on the cap. They've kind of committed to that, to not having it be sort of drastic, because there's been issues with that before in terms of drastically changing just how teams had to operate. But presumably it's going to go up and up and up, especially, with new TV rights deals coming pretty soon. So that could obviously change the math pretty significantly down the line. It makes sense on a few levels on both sides. So again, not sure if one or the other was the driving force, or if they just both came to that agreement, but all the same, they've got him under contract for 4 years. Obviously that gives them two max deals, with him and Tyrese Haliburton. I mean, it's going to, keep them under contract. Obviously, I think July 6th is when you can actually put pen to paper. That's obviously a big start, to the Pacers offseason. That was kind of what they viewed, as their most critical component. And obviously that takes away a lot of the flexibility going forward. I mean, they're not upset about that, because obviously they committed to that deal thinking that was their big move. Obviously they spent three first round draft picks on that. That's why they don't have a pick this year, is they had two going in and they moved them to get Siakam. They're basically obviously putting a lot on him and sort of presuming, hey, that's Tyrese Haliburton's sort of all-star caliber running mate, along with your Miles Turner's, Benedict Mathurin, Theron Neesmith, et cetera, but he's the other guy going forward for the next 4 years. So that's obviously big and sort of changes everything about what the Pacers are going to do. But as you mentioned, a few other big decisions they have to make. Obi Toppin is set to be a restricted free agent. They've got to decide what they're willing to give him. Obviously the way it works if you're restricted is, other teams can make offers, but you have the right to match. And it's a situation where you can't, even if the player would rather go to whoever gave him the offer, if you match, you keep him. We'll see kind of what happens going forward there. Obviously, as you mentioned, TJ McConnell, his deal is, he has a contract that's only partially guaranteed for this year, but I think as long as he's on the roster as of the day after the draft, basically the rest of that contract is guaranteed. So obviously you presume that's going to happen and imagine they'll probably try to work out something a little bit longer term. Obviously he's, if they wanted to make a move, he's obviously a good piece and becoming a better one as I think teams see what he can bring. But I think they've come to really believe that he's a guy that they really need going forward. They like what they're getting out of him. Obviously, he's playing his best basketball at the age of 32. So you would presume they're going to look to add a couple more years to his deal if they can. Down the line in July, they've got decisions to make about, offering extension to Andrew Nembhard. He is extension eligible, I think, because he's a second-round pick. And so they have an opportunity to offer him. I think it's maybe 4 years, somewhere in the $70 million range. And so obviously he's got to make a decision as to whether he thinks that's his best option or if he should wait another year to make a decision on that, considering what else could be out there for him if he hits the free agent market. So that's kind of where they're at. At this point, basically they've got, I think, 9 of their 11 guys. Also, Jalen Smith has a decision to make as far as his player option is concerned. I believe June 29th is the deadline there in terms of what he wants to do. So that's kind of where everything stands. But I mean, they I think, more or less have 9 of their first 11 under contract going forward for next year. And so obviously they can keep a couple of those other guys. So that leaves them with not a lot of openings as far as, guys that could step in. And so you're looking for some offensive, you're just looking for depth, looking for guys that aren't necessarily going to have a role right off the bat going forward, but you're considering sort of what can help you long term, but also who can help you if you end up with injuries or something like that. It seems like they're looking for guys that they think can plug and play.
And the other part of this, they have two guys that, didn't contribute much the last few months of the season, and they're both top 10 picks. Benedict Mathurin obviously was injured. Everything is going up and up on his recovery. Jairus Walker, who we've talked about as well. Ben Shepherd was a great surprise at number 26. I don't think anybody envisioned him coming in and putting together the minutes he did, especially in crunch time in the playoffs. So that's kind of a pleasant surprise. So what do you do with 3 second-round draft picks? Because as you mentioned, there's not a lot of room on this roster to move around. I guess if I had a wish list, I'd want to grab somebody like, I don't know, Brook Lopez to throw in there, something to maybe a little bit of a banger more than a flexible Turner type guy. That's the only glaring hole it looks like right now. I mean, you can never have enough 6'8 guys that can shoot, but those guys don't usually fall in the second round, do they?
Yeah, sure. No, I mean, there's a bunch of different options they have, I think, the directions they can go with this thing. It was very notable to me once we saw the end of it, but in terms of who they brought in for workouts, I think they brought in, out of 36 total players in 6 workouts, I think 30 of them were college guys. Obviously, I think there was 5 that were sort of international players, and they had one guy, Boo Carsane from G League Ignite. And of the 30 college guys, 29 of them had played at least 3 years of college and had started at least 3 years. And so I think that they view Ben Shepherd as kind of a model for what they're looking at here. And not necessarily trying to get the same type of player, but I think their viewing experience is very important here. Because I think they looked at what Shepherd did. You got to remember, I mean, Shepherd only played in 18 of the first 40 games of the season. He spent a lot of time, basically taxiing with Jairus Walker, down the Mad Ants games. I mean, obviously, you don't actually have to taxi this year because they were playing all their games at Gainbridge. So it was kind of like JV basketball. I mean, it was fun to kind of check that out because, the varsity guys would come up and watch Jairus and Ben, like they were on JVs. A relatively empty Gainbridge against, some of those, like the Delaware Bluecoats and whatnot. But Shepherd was kind of waiting his time. And, when he stepped in, he was an easy plug and play guy, as Rick Carlisle said over and over when we asked about Ben Shepherd. He's like, he just does his role. And that's exactly what we want. He, runs, he plays hard defense. He takes open shots, and when he's not open, he moves the ball. He does exactly what his role is. He is not trying to do too much at all, but he's got 4 years experience. He comes in, with no preconception as to what his role is supposed to be in terms of feeling like he is owed more. So he just does his job. And so, that makes it really easy that, when the opening is there, he can just step in and play, and you don't have to worry about the fact that how his confidence feels, the fact that he hasn't maybe played in the previous 5 games. He can just step in there and do what you want, whether that's for 3 minutes, 5 minutes, 10 minutes, or 20, or whatever. And that's how he ended up working out throughout the season. Obviously, they made the moves, you know, putting Brown and Jordan Nora in the Siakam deal, moving Buddy Hield out. You know, Doug McDermott got hurt, you know, the guy who came back from that deal. Obviously, then Mathurin gets his shoulder injury. So you end up opening up these minutes at the two and the three position, and they had to rely on it really throughout the second half of the season and, you know, through into the playoffs. And he made a big impact. So I think you look at him and say, okay, well, look for guys with similar profiles. And as Brad Stevens kind of mentioned at his press conference today, you know, you're going to have, because of NIL, because of COVID, you're going to have this influx of talented guys who have won. That are around in the second round. And there's a bunch of obviously, I don't think anybody looks at this draft and thinks it's one of the best, but there's depth there. You look in the second round, you see a bunch of guys, Jamal Sheed, Tristan Newton, really stand out to me, Kevin McCullough. There's some other, a long list of guys that have been on winning teams and have strung two, three, four years together when they've been top players. And they're not necessarily the most high ceiling of guys, but there's a lot of guys with high floors that I think you can trust to run out there, even if it's sporadic, and trust they're going to go get out there and know what they're doing. So I think that's kind of what they're looking for. And that could be, I think, in any position. I mean, I feel like if they don't think Jalen Smith's going to pick up that player option, I think you'll see a focus on at least 1-5. Just so there's somebody behind Turner and Jackson. But otherwise, I mean, I think they're just looking for guys who can play multiple positions that are going to be ready if they lose somebody. I mean, even if it's just for a couple games, you have that over the course of 82. Ankles get tweaked, guys get sick, it happens. And so you got to call on somebody. And I think they look at it and say that they could use some depth at a couple positions. And again, you could really use some guys that can play one or two, that basically that if the opening is here, they can play here, and if the opening is there, they can play there. I think that's kind of keys that they're looking at. And I think that's how they do these guys. Sorry, Maxine's got thoughts.
That's all right. Live radio is the best. Dustin DePirik is our guest, IndyStar.com, at Dustin DePirik. On the Twitterverse, support local journalism. Buy a subscription to the Indy Star so you can read about all of the great draft prospects the Pacers have been working out. Let's go back to Toppin for a minute. He did have a career year, so that's going to help him. The NBA is notorious for teams that will overpay because most everybody has some extra money laying around somewhere. You have Walker. You drafted Walker. Walker should be Toppin, right?
I mean, in theory. I mean, obviously, they're you look at their bodies and they're not that dissimilar, but they have very different playing styles. And so I think they really like Walker, but I mean, I think they are kind of having a hard time figuring out, well, where exactly does he fit? And you throw Obi in there and you know exactly what you're getting. And there's not necessarily the same, Walker has more overall skill. There's more things that he can do. I mean, he's like, the guy can run the point.
And he's
cheaper.
Handles
it pretty well. Yeah, and he is cheaper. And all of those things. But, I mean, I think they really like the weapon that they have with Obi, and I think they're going to have a hard time parting with it because he just fits so well with the up-tempo offense that they play. Having a guy that can outrun everybody and finish just really adds to that. And obviously just get everybody going with the dunks and whatnot. There's value there. And so it's just a question of, I think Toppin would like to stay because I don't think anybody can utilize him the same way that the Pacers can. They like that weapon. I mean, they like the idea of when you get the ball to Toppin in transition, you're getting 2 points because he's
good
going
point
to finish. And in spectacular fashion, he's not missing those. I mean, and it's not just the dunks. I mean, the dunks are part of it, certainly, just knowing that you've got a guy that if he's on the break, he can dunk the basketball. He's, very rarely going to miss those or fail to do so. But, I mean, if you have somebody in his way, he does really have really good touch around the basket. But the speed is really the biggest thing, and that's always been his biggest thing, is he can just get downhill. I mean, he really is like a tight end running a seam route and, can just scorch the linebacker getting down the floor.
Don't give Chris Ballard any ideas. Don't give Ballard any – don't do that. But if somebody comes up and says, we're going to give Obi Toppin 4 years, $80 million, the Pacers are going to just tip their hat and say, we'll see you later. So, okay, that sounds like we're good. 3 second-round picks, you put them together with Jairus Walker, you put them in a package, you move those picks down the road to next year, the year after it. What is this team really – I don't see any glaring errors of what they do need, but I don't think they're – are they going to find it in those 3 picks, or is it better to have draft capital?
Yeah, I mean, I would still be surprised if they make all 3 of these. You know, obviously they can take one of them and make that a two-way guy and sort of hope that turns into something. I mean, I presume that they'll be willing to open at least one or two of those spots they have that were taken up by Isaiah Wong and Oscar Tshiebwe last year. They obviously have Kendall Brown now on contract. So I think I wouldn't be surprised if they move one of those and try to pair them with something, but I also don't know what they're going to get for it. I mean, 50 is not easy to move, 49 is not easy to move, and I think they like 36. So they're going to be opportunistic and see what comes about. I mean, obviously, if someone's interested in that, if somebody really feels like they want bodies, and that's possible. I mean, I think for some of the top teams, sometimes they have issues, you know, just getting depth because they're paying their top guys so much money. You know, obviously you saw Boston really, you know, Boston worked out kind of well because they had a better playoff bench than they had a regular season bench, but they had issues in, you know, during kind of those second unit moments for a lot of the year because, you know, like you get down to their eighth, ninth, and tenth guy and you had some issues. And so I think there probably are some teams, you know, maybe Boston and maybe a Minnesota or Denver or somebody like that, they could use those second round picks to you know, kind of really add to the end of their bench so they have more firm, you know, really firm second units as opposed to having some holes in there. So maybe that's movable to maybe move them up to, you know, a 28, a 29, a 30, somewhere in that range. But I don't know if it's worth it for the Pacers necessarily to make a move like that. You know, we'll see. I mean, I think they'll make at least one of these picks just because I feel like at the end of the day, they could use you know, just one more guy that they can really trust that doesn't have to be part of the rotation, that can be ready when his name's called. I feel like that they see some value in that. You know, obviously something could come about that they can't pass up and say, okay, yeah, you could take all those second rounders because I'm a better team if I got, you know, these guys. But we'll see what comes up with that. And obviously they're going to keep their antenna up. Certainly it's going to be interesting this year to see what changes with a two-day draft because you're going to have, you know, at the end of the first round on when you're doing both in one night, it's obviously just a flurry and trying to get everything done in a very tight window,
right?
And make some decisions really, really quickly. Now you have probably
all morning, right?
What, 20 hours, yeah, exactly, from you know, midnight or whatever it'll be, or 11 o'clock at night until you know, 4 o'clock in the afternoon. You have all that time to kind of think of what you want to do and reconsider things. I think that you will see, I think, significant differences in how the draft is handled. I think again, I think you also see some differences in how the draft is handled because there are a lot of guys that you can trust. I don't know that you'll see as much sort of drafting and storing as maybe you've seen in recent years, because there's just going to be a lot of 4 and 5 year guys that are trustworthy basketball players that I think a lot of people would like to have.
Jalen Smith is, I would think, is probably going to stick around the way his season ended. I don't know who else is out there desperate, but there's, again, the NBA always has somebody overpaying. It happens every single offseason where you say, wow, I can't believe Bruce Brown got $20 million from the Pacers. How are they on their cap? Are we going to have any surprises such as that? Or did Pascal Siakam's pending deal going to fill in all those blanks? Heck, I'm old enough to remember when you gave Miles Turner a $20 million bonus and brought in Brown because you're nowhere near the cap.
Right. Yeah, no, they're not. Obviously, you know, signing Siakam means that they are going to be close enough to the cap that the salary floor is not an issue. They're well past that, obviously. to your point, I mean, they had to give somebody money.
Yes,
so it went,
that's the law.
So, yeah, I mean, they were either going to use it or lose it, so somebody had to get paid. More or less, there was going to be a penalty otherwise if they failed to meet that floor. So they obviously ended up working out because they got some good production out of Bruce Brown before the point where we were able to package him for Siakam. And they, you know, without having to move, without having to move, you know, Benedict Mathurin or something, or Jairus Walker or somebody like that, or even Buddy Hield at the time, were able to get a deal done. And that obviously worked out great for them. So, you know, ended up being a smart move when you really play all the moves down the road. But no, they're not in any position that they're going to have to give money to somebody. They've already given it out, you know, between obviously Tyrese Halliburton's extension finally kicking in now, between those two, you know, that takes up a lot of it. You still have Miles Turner on a $20 million deal. So really those three, they take up plenty, enough cap space, between among them, that you don't have any worries about having to reach the floor. You're, you know, more likely going to be right around the edge of that cap. But they're going to have, I think, a pretty good amount of space before the luxury tax apron. The first one.
Dustin Dupirak is our guest. We're getting ready for the Pacers. They will not pick on Wednesday as of right now. I wouldn't see a way in 1,000 years that they would move into the first round. But stranger things have happened. The Pacers will have, again, three picks in the second round, which will be 4 o'clock on Thursday. Am I a bad NBA fan because I can't tell you who the number one pick's going to be tomorrow?
No, you're just like everybody else.
Who's it going to be?
Like I said, yeah, I mean, obviously the numbers that the guys that you keep seeing, 1 and 2 are Alex Starr, the Frenchman who's playing in Australia, and the other Frenchman, Zakare Rissage. I have no idea how you say his name.
Right.
I don't. But it's ZR is kind of what I'll go with just to not embarrass myself. But those seem to be the standard 1s and 2s, and I think it's generally agreed upon that it's not a very top-heavy draft, basically, that looking back, there aren't necessarily any clean-cut stars in there. But once you get past those two, it's going to be one of those two. Not sure which. It seems like ZR has been the guy lately that I'm seeing more at the top of more mock drafts. I guess there's reporting out there, or at least rumor out there, that Alex Starr has turned down a workout with the Hawks who have the number one pick. I don't know if that's true, but I've seen that.
He heard Osterman was a big fan, so he said, I'm good.
Yeah, exactly. I don't
pass.
Know if you need to be a part of that.
Pass. We pass on it.
I've seen what that guy does with Liverpool. I don't know.
What about Khalil Ware for our Indiana fans listening? He has been projected anywhere from in the lottery to the end of the first round and all parts in between. Milwaukee makes perfect sense. Lopez is getting old. You need a guy to fill in that spot.
Sure.
If he falls out of the first round, did the Pacers take a look at him? He seems like that'd be exactly what you'd want to fit behind Turner.
Yeah, I think he'd be worth checking out again. The biggest thing in that case would be if you know that Smith is going to decline his option. If you're bringing him in and Smith does not decline his option, then you've got that big logjam there again. You're throwing one more guy in it. I don't think they have a problem having a third center and one that is clearly behind Isaiah Jackson. But I don't know that they necessarily want to recreate a major competition there. And I certainly don't think they need four guys. And obviously that led to them having to basically just give away Daniel Theis, to the Clippers. I mean, that was basically you could take them. There was no way to make it work without them just letting him walk. So I don't think they want that situation again, where they're in a position where they're going to have to just release somebody and just take the L there. So I think that would be clearly on the basis of that, but I don't think he's going to be around. It seems much more likely that he's somewhere in the 18 to 25 range. That's where I keep seeing him, and for good reason. Obviously, he's a talented player and really fits what a lot of teams are looking for a center at this point, with the size, with the height, the shot blocking ability, but also the ability to step back and hit three-pointers. And obviously saw the value of that, when Kristaps Porzingis was available in the NBA Finals.
And oh, my.
Just tremendous. So, and that's a non-healthy version of him. It's obviously a big deal when you can play five out. And you can have a guy, even Miles Turner, who has the same amount of height or even wingspan, but it's just over the years proven that he can block shots and step back and hit threes, and just what that does for your spacing. When you can get a guy who could pick and pop as well as roll to the bucket and score that way, that's the kind of weapons that you're looking for. I'm kind of surprised that you're still seeing Edie on top of him at this point, because where I think, is
the modern player, isn't he?
Seems to be going. Yeah, exactly. He's a more modern player.
Well, I was going to ask you about Edie. You did a good job weaving that in there because, again, how does he guard pick and roll? How does he get to the
right.
– there's a lot. But the other part is, if you got to bump up against Embiid or you got to battle with Gobert or Jokic or – well, he's – I don't know.
Yeah, you could use the minutes.
That's it. He doesn't have to be a 40-minute guy all-star. He can be a great piece of a puzzle somewhere. So
exactly.
It'll be terribly interesting.
I don't think anybody's drafting him looking and saying that that's going to be your all-star center.
The franchise or whatever. No,
right.
That's not, it's not
out
his
there
league.
For 20 minutes, he's going to rebound like crazy because, just basically – anything that is in his zone, he's going to be able to stick his arms out and get. He's obviously going to affect shots, and certainly you're going to be sticking him in drop coverage in the pick and roll, and he's going to hang back, and you're going to have to shoot over him. He's not going to come up and blitz you. Certainly, right?
Defensive
like
3 seconds, though. I don't know how that.
it's an issue. He definitely is going to have an issue getting. Defense is the thing. I think everybody.
Oh, right.
Use it that way for sure. He's going to be able to body people up and whatnot.
He just can't stand underneath the basket like he did at Purdue and affect the game from there, because the NBA do that. That's not the rule, and that's why people watch, because it's exciting.
Sure. No, 100%. It changes. Yeah, exactly. He definitely has to be a different player at the NBA level than he was in college, but I think, again, just somebody with that kind of size and that kind of offensive skill for his size is going to matter. And so I think particularly it being an overall down draft and just there not being the total amount of talent there, I think there's much more willingness to take some flyers in this year's draft than there was certainly in last year's. I think there's a big reason why he didn't come out last year. He is definitely better, I think, better suited for this than he was a year ago.
Yes, 100%.
But even if you threw him in if you took everybody else from last year's draft and put him in it, he's probably not a first-round pick. But with this draft, the way that it is, basically when there's a lot of unproven guys at the top, and again, there's not nearly the kind of superstar power that you had, and depth. I mean, obviously you had Wembanyama up top, but I mean, there was a lot of other talented guys, beyond that. And so it was tough for him to break in. This year's group is much, much easier for him to break in. I mean, it seems like you're seeing everything from really 15, to 25 for him, but more, towards the 15, 16, 17, 18 range. And so it seems like he's safely going to be a first round pick, which again, you got to give the guy credit because, before his sophomore year in high school, he wasn't playing.
Right.
Yeah. So I mean,
baseball player.
Yeah. Baseball, hockey. We've seen this 1,000 times, but it's amazing. I mean, I was still on the Purdue beat when he was recruited, and I remember him walking into Mackey for their version of Hoosier Hysteria, which is very muted, and asking Brian Newbert, the Rivals guy up there, who's done a great job for so many years, and I was Brian. Do you know who this guy is? I have no idea. Like, we knew he was huge. He had to be somebody, but, he didn't even have a picture on the recruiting websites at this point, and then he ended up being player of the year.
That's so, it. They didn't want to put a hockey picture up there. They had no credibility if they put the hockey picture up there.
Exactly.
So the first round's tomorrow night, 8 o'clock, primetime television, and Thursday afternoon we get going, and then the Sunday at, or I guess it would be Monday morning at 12:01, the all hell breaks loose, right, on the 1st? Isn't that how that
Before
works?
Before than that, it'll be the 30th now.
Oh, the 30th. Okay, good.
So
good, good,
6
good.
6 p.m. on the 30th. 6 p.m. Sunday is when everything goes live. Yeah.
Just when Dustin's sitting down with his lovely wife to have dinner. No, let's open the free agent. It was more fun when it was at 12:01 a.m. It's like midnight madness. You didn't have to go if you didn't want to. You didn't have to practice at 12:01. But if you wanted to get these deals going.
But you could.
But you absolutely could. All right, buddy, we will check in with you after the 4th of July holiday. I'm going to take a short week next week. Surprise, surprise. Just like everybody else on the planet. And then we will get through the first week of free agent. Agency, and then we'll see where the Pacers where they went in the draft and what they are doing and putting some pieces together if they are putting pieces together. I think it'll be interesting. I just don't think it will be I don't think a lot of chess pieces on the board will be moved.
Same. Yeah,
good.
I would agree.
And that's fine because the team did go to an Eastern Conference final and they did so without Benedict Mathurin even participating for the last, 3 months of the season. So that's like a brand new draft pick coming back as well. So exciting times. Thanks for making time for us today. Great job as always. Have a great 4th, and we'll get caught up with you next month, buddy.
Sounds good, Glass. Thanks as always, man.